can I really start a feud with any airline? Like,
I do need to be careful in what I say here.
Yes, yes, you absolutely could.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
You're the 737 expert, Christos. Name an airline. You could probably tell me if they operate 737.
I probably right. could now. The Jetson airline.
Southwest.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Probably is. I mean.
So why should we be excited about the Singapore A380?
I don't know. I like the A350.
Go on.
Mate, thank you for cutting me off there, Russ, but...
Love you, Nick.
Wait.
That blew my eardrums.
Yes, thank you.
That's great.
Way too much.
Live in Melbourne and across the aviation world, this is Radio Runway. That's right. We are back. We still exist. Apologies, everyone. It's been tough. You know, mid-year blues for all four of us. We're all working hard within the industry. So we finally found a chance to sit down with each other and discuss everything that's been going on. And there has been a lot, gentlemen. So much so that we've actually had our listeners on the phones to us asking, where are we? What's happening?
And speaking of phones, let's listen to some of our viewers now. I see we've got someone on line one. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Oh my God, guys, this is amazing. I've always wanted to speak to you guys. This is awesome. I can't believe I'm through.
Well, you know what? It's great to have a valued listener on the line. And you know what? I have to say, it's people like you that bring us back to the show week after week, every single week. We've never missed a single week of episodes. We're here every single week.
Yeah.
I got to say, this listener really sounds familiar. Hey, caller, what is your name?
Boys, it's a pleasure to be back with you guys.
Oh my gosh, he is back, he is back, he is back, everyone. Here we go.
Hey!
Hello.
Christos, welcome back. Glad to have you on.
Yes. Can I just say, I want to apologize for being MIA for a little while, boys. It's just been, pretty hectic year, as Tom mentioned.
Yeah.
Working within aviation.
Yeah, exactly. All four of us work in different parts of the aviation industry, and I can assure you that Christos is in one very hectic portion of the industry, especially within Australia. So it's good that he can take some time to join us on the line tonight for what will be a very hot first discussion
I'm
point.
Pretty sure there's a lot of baggage that comes with Christos's role as well. So.
Hey, now I can definitely say I fit in the baggage compartment of an aircraft.
Yes, he can.
That is honestly one of the best soundbites that we have.
Confirmed.
I know.
It's confirmed.
I could probably fit in the luggage compartment easy.
That's it.
Oh, predicting his future.
Yep. That's it. Well, boys, it has been an intense... we'll admit it. Fine. It's been an intense couple of months since we last spoke. The most intense part of all is the fact that not just Bonza is the victim of 2024, but also now Rex.
Yeah.
There's a lot that's happened then. There's a lot to unpack. I kind of want to start with you, Nick. When you first heard the news about Rex going under, what was your first thought or reaction?
To be honest, I thought, oh no, like it is going to be harder now to travel domestically. That was genuinely my first thought, because you take a player out of the market, it reduces competition, and now you have a duopoly, which feels as though, you know, everything in Australia, anything big, you know, is either a duopoly or you know, it works in pairings of four. Like, you know, how many major supermarkets do we have in Australia? Two. How many banks in Australia do we have? Four. You know, you know, petrol stations or whatever, insurance company. Like I feel as though there's just a lack of competition, and it's looking that way in the aviation space, domestically at least in Australia, and even internationally. I still don't know what the go is with the whole Qatar situation about whether they're being able to.
Those extra
have
slots.
The extra 27 flights a week, I think it was. Yeah. But that was my initial thought. But then, looking at it, sort of realized that we'd be losing a really good airline, but it's an airline that unfortunately not a lot of people know of, or at least people know of them, but they don't sort of realize how sort of safe they are, how good their service is, perhaps, how good the prices are. And I think that's one of the things I actually let them down, was the marketing side of it and the use of things like their website, because I have flown with them before.
It's not user-friendly.
It is not user-friendly at all.
Compare it to Qantas and Jetstar's website and Virgin's website.
And Virgin's website.
Not only is it prehistoric, but it's not ergonomic.
No,
it's not user-friendly.
It's not user-friendly at all, no.
You feel like you've gone to... When you accidentally type in a URL and it takes you to like one of those sites that's like, you can buy this URL, and it's a random 2-bit page that's been built in a PowerPoint, and it just, yeah, the Rex website felt like that to me.
It's a bit scary. I don't know, like when you book a flight on Rex as well, do you know how you have like the verifications to make sure that you're not a robot and it's like pick photos with cars in them? Like, you know, like you're doing that like 3 times before you can even like,
yeah.
And pick what flight you want to go on.
You just have a simple tick box capture for any of the Qantas or VA
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, backwards.
What were you going to say, Ross?
No, I was just going to say, when I first learned of the news of Rex, it honestly came as a bit of a shock to me, because I'll admit I wasn't really staying on top of the news that was going on with Rex leading up to their announcements that they were having severe financial issues. But as far as I was concerned, they just recently started a new route operating to Perth. They were taking delivery of new aircraft. So as far as in layman's terms, or what regular people would be concerned about, that they were performing quite well. But when you actually do a deep dive into how their routes were performing, very few of them were actually profitable. Like the average load factors on their flights were far lower than that of what you'd see on Virgin, Qantas or Jetstar.
Mm.
So that initially when Rex started, when the demand for aviation far outweighed the supply, Rex were performing so well. And that's what they relied on at first. But over the years, because when I first flew on Rex, it was back when the bounce back was happening. So as far as I was concerned, I've only flown on Rex once. That was on a 7-3 between Melbourne and Sydney. It was a full flight. So I thought, wow, Rex are really performing well here. And I'll admit, I haven't flown on them since and I haven't really been on top of it. But it really came as a shock to me when I first learned about it.
Mm. What about you, Krosos? You first hear the news that Rex is going under after just... only a couple of years ago breaking into the narrow-body domestic market on trunk routes on the Eastern Seaboard. What's your thoughts when you hear that they're going under?
Yeah, I wasn't... definitely was a little bit of a shock because I was finding out a couple of days beforehand just in the news that they were heading into a bit of financial struggle, and I thought, all right, well, maybe they'll work their way out of this. And then, yeah, I was at work when news came out that they were going into, was it voluntary administration, and I thought, oh my god, like all the poor workers, because yeah, like what both Nick and Ross were saying, they were taking on new aircraft or a new route, so obviously new employees were getting hired, pilots were getting trained, crews were getting trained, ground handling crew trained, so a lot of those people have lost their jobs now. And even then, yeah, like again with Nick, with what Nick was saying, I always thought it as, you know, Q-Link was taking on regional Rex. I guess Virgin was taking on Jetstar in the market. Now who's to compete with Qantas Mainline in a sense? And again, it's always good to have a bit of competition for the consumer and for the company itself. So be interesting to see who can take on Qantas now, I guess.
I've got a question, actually. I want to pitch to you guys. Now, this is all sort of hypothetical. It doesn't have to be factual or anything. We don't have the facts, you know, with us. But given how the landscape looks at the moment in terms of Australian aviation domestically, how many airlines do you think could operate within Australia? Do you think? Like, if they were... We'll get into the pitfalls of Rex, because there are a few that we have looked into. I mean, marketing is number one, but we will look into some other ones as well. But how many airlines do you think would comfortably be able to operate in the domestic space in Australia if they were run well? My guess is about 4.
Yeah, I would say 4, but history has showed Australia has only ever been able to sustain 2 full cost and 2 low cost carriers.
Mm.
Okay, COVID ruined everything, but in the years leading up to COVID, it was Qantas and Virgin as your full service carriers competing, Jetstar and Tiger as their low cost carriers competing as well.
Yep, yep.
And then Rex was like its own entity in a sense. Like they were just, you know, dominating that regional sector.
Rex wasn't even in the question at that point. No. And it was in the years leading up to COVID when the competition basically balanced itself out like that. Rex would never have won the competition if they tried to introduce 737 services at that point in time.
Yeah.
Then when COVID happened, it knocked out Tiger was the first one that went. I understand that there were some other financial issues happening with Tiger, but COVID was the final nail in the coffin there.
100%.
Then obviously Virgin went into administration as well. So that really led to a reshuffling of the Australian domestic market. And then post-COVID, when Virgin resurfaced as a hybrid, low-cost, full-service sort of carrier, a lot of questions were being raised as to whether or not what market are they competing in.
Mm.
And that's what I reckon led to a lot of confusion among the consumers. Like, are Rex still trying to get their business travelers from pre-COVID onto a low-cost type of airline? Like, what was the business model that Virgin is trying to make?
Yeah.
And then Rex sees the opportunity to take Virgin's old aircraft that they got rid of when COVID happened. And in theory, Rex was filling the void of being that extra full-service carrier. But then in the years leading down the track, fact check me on this, but I think Rex's product wasn't, they were aiming for the business traveler, but they didn't have the product to back it up. Like, yes. If you look at their frequent flyer programs
that's
as
exactly
well,
that's exactly what I'm going to talk about. Yeah. They didn't, they in every sense of the definition of a rewards or a frequent flyer program, they did not meet the very criteria of said definition. First of all, they're not making connections or networking with enough airlines.
No.
They're also not offering enough value for money in the frequent flyer and rewards program. And fourth, who the hell's even heard of the Rex frequent flyer program? I couldn't tell you the name of it.
That actually only started about a year ago or 2 years ago. It wasn't until a couple of years after they started their 737 services that they introduced their loyalty program.
Yeah, but so market the hell out of it, man. I get bloody, there's a frequent flyer related ad for Qantas every day. In somewhere that I see.
Yeah, everywhere.
Woolies, BP, independently with the Olympics, anything.
Look, I read an article the other day and it actually said that, where was it?
Obviously, Qantas have a lot more marketing power, but still.
It said that quite a few consumers of the Australian aviation market weren't even aware that Rex were operating intercity services on the major trunk routes. They thought they were always regional aircraft. So that's where I think another fallback of Rex's marketing happened. They didn't advertise that they were actually offering the same services that the other main carriers were offering. And back to the whole two full service, two low cost airlines sort of market that Australia can handle, Bonza was, I'd say, very effective in the sense of filling up that extra gap in the low cost market, which I think put Virgin in more of a state as like, right, what market is Virgin in? Because I think if those five airlines, Jetstar, Rex, Bonza, Qantas and Virgin all continuing on, where would Virgin fit in the mix?
Yeah.
Now that Rex is gone, I'd say Virgin can get back into its full service state that it once was prior to COVID.
Yeah, I agree.
I think what we're missing out on as well, and what we have to give credit for, but also not give credit for as well, it's hard one to say, but how good Qantas is.
Yeah.
How dominant they are. I mean, we were talking about frequent fly programs. I mean, this is an airline whose primary revenue comes from their frequent flyer program. It doesn't come from flying passengers. It comes from the money made from selling frequent flyer points to you know, other institutions, whether it be banks, whether it be supermarkets, and then you obviously, you know, you get those points and you redeem them back on the Qantas. So I did this in uni with Mitch, obviously, from episode 4. Shout out, Mitch. But what we found, which was rather fascinating, is that if you look at how Qantas makes its money, Qantas is a bank at the end of the day that just has a small little airline firm on the side. It's a little transportation firm on the side. Most of the money is made through Qantas frequent flyer. But I think what we have to notice as well is that if we're talking about business travel, you know, what do business travelers want the most? Because typically business travelers aren't as price conscious as the leisure traveler. Business travelers want to get to where they want to go at the time that they want to go to. So they want frequencies. And I think that's another thing that Rex didn't have is the frequencies.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, not enough upscale to really push their way into the domestic market.
I think what happened, right, at Rex should have done that they didn't do is rather than expanding to, you know, all these new destinations, they should have focused on the two or three key destinations and added frequency on it rather than expand out.
Yeah. If I can add to that, Nick, Rex going for the business traveler without the product to back it up, like Rex really came under scrutiny with some of the lounges that they had to offer. So I don't know if any of you guys have been into the other lounges that Qantas or Virgin would have to offer across the network, but I'd say they'd be pretty extensive with all of your meal services that are provided, just the layout, the layout of the lounge, and all the necessities that you've got access to there. There were some photos that were leaked of what the Rex lounges were like at Melbourne Airport, and I know you viewers cannot see these photos that I'm showing you around, but it looks like a hospital's waiting room.
Oh my gosh, that's the Rex Lounge?
At Melbourne Airport, yes.
That looks like a public library. It actually looks like a public library.
Yeah, we'll put it up on the Insta and we'll see what you guys think.
Oh my
so when gosh. You're competing that, if you're trying to get the business traveler and you've got that compared to more established loyalty programs offered by Qantas or Virgin, which you can redeem for more flexibility in flights, more variety in the flights that they have to offer, like there really wasn't even a competition there. And we'll probably touch on the slotting issue in Sydney a bit later on, but obviously Rex only had 6 slots into Sydney Airport for the whole day.
Yeah,
Interrupt Ross there? Sorry for interrupting you there, Ross.
Thank you for interrupting me there, Christos.
I'm very curious to see what the situation would have been if Rex could have held out until Western Sydney Airport opened up.
I agree.
And seeing the situation, if they were going to be dominant in that sector route, if that makes sense, where everyone already knew, obviously, Qantas is dominating the slot service.
Just the thought of that has really given me chills.
I think...
Rex going constantly to Western Sydney. Thanks for interrupting me there, Tom.
Sorry, I have an answer for you, Christos. I actually have an answer for you. And it rests solely on the answer to the following question with a bit of context. I'll give the context first. It's since come out that the slot management company at Sydney Airport, as we've discussed previously, fellas, is actually run on a lease by a third party that is majority owned by Virgin Australia and Qantas. Now, Rex were only granted 5 slots within major like revenue portions of the day, you know, morning and evening on business days, right? I think the answer to your question, Christos, about, you know, regarding whether Rex would have thrived and or bounced back when WSI opened rests solely on the answer to, is the slot management for WSI, is the responsibility for that handed to the same company, the same third-party company? If the answer is no and it's an independent company or it's a, you know, government-run company, or government, you know, it's just government-run, I think, yeah, Rex gets a fair go. Rex actually can hash it out. If the same third-party company that, you know, clearly without really there being too much of a deep dive into it, is in some way favoring VA and Qantas or has an established better established relationship with QF and VA, if they were to manage that slot, the slots of WSI when it opens, I don't think Rex would have had even the slightest bit more of a chance than they already do.
Well, then with that, is it I think it's fair to say that if it was also a slot issue, was Rex also, I'm not going to say batting too high with the 737 decision, but would it have been more profitable for them to have gone for, let's say, a bigger prop aircraft like a Dash or an ATR? Or not even, if they wanted to go just maybe an A220?
C-17.
So,
I'd say
even that.
Look, I'd say that's a question that can't really be ruled out because majority of Rex's Saab fleet are quite aging. They're nearing 30 years old. Some of their aircraft
are over 30, but they are actually maintained incredibly well.
Saab 340B, but the B is for Boomer. Because they're so old.
And it, the other interesting thing I was thinking of as well was, imagine, again, let's say the situation wasn't as it was, could we have seen Rex go to a wide-body aircraft eventually into the future and compete with Qantas on international spectrums?
I don't think that would happen. The name of the airline doesn't really help its case. Regional Express.
Well, Regional Express, but again, they were going to capital cities.
It could also be serving the region of Oceania. We don't know.
The region the world.
Imagine getting to, as we know, rules of the sky, or as we did in uni, what rights each airline has.
Freedom Night, Freedom, all that kind of stuff.
Imagine Rex. Imagine Rex could have taken advantage of regional sectors in other countries.
That's a good point.
They probably could have worked in New Zealand.
True. I mean, Jetstar have a presence in New Zealand.
Yeah, I think
it's very possible that Rex could have, with scale, done the same thing. Okay, now let's talk about the elephant in the room when it comes to Rex, which is the claim or allegation that the reason that they're in this pickle now is because they mismanaged or took a sort of immature direction with the funds, the handout granted to them by the government in at the beginning of COVID. They get that handout being to solidify and grow and strengthen the regional network that they've already established and built. And instead, what they've done is taken that money and taken over the lease for narrow-body aircraft and tried to break into the trunk routes to compete with major airlines. With that, it's partially allegation, partially confirmed. But with that, what's your opinion on Rex's decision to do that instead of spending the funds for what was supposedly they were intended for?
Well, I was actually going
to ask. Was that signed? I just need to confirm. Was that in writing contract, the government saying,
it was not,
Rex, we're giving you this money for this reason?
Oh, I mean, obviously, no. That's why they did it, because they knew that there was no legal, nothing legally binding them to stay on course with what the money was intended for, which is probably why they decided to make it. For them, it was probably a no-brainer. And you know what? If I was in Rex's shoes, I'd probably do the same thing. I'd probably be like, let's stick it to the big carrier that dominates the market. But you've got to have everything, all your ducks in a row for that to happen. And that's just a fact.
You have all ducks in a row, but also you got to understand as well that Qantas will not die. I said this to Ross the other day. Qantas will not die. The day Qantas dies, I don't know what will happen in Australian aviation.
I feel as though
Qantas has too much of a history now.
Yeah.
It's the second oldest airline in the world. Mm. The amount of stuff it's done to help the Australian public. It's an Australian icon at the end of the day. Whether you like it or not, it is an Australian icon.
Yep.
You are anywhere in the world and you see that red roux, it is an Australian icon. That brand will not die.
And we had the discussion in the Ansett episodes around how the government sided with Qantas during the Ansett saga and ultimately played a hand in the demise of Ansett in part. Mm. And that should be the only sign you need to know where traditionally the relationships lie between the government, the people of Australia, and the airline industry within Australia. But I think we're at a turning point now, a clear turning point, where there's enough traction in the public eye to generate a fairer market, or to like generate change towards the direction of a fairer aviation market within Australia. Because right now, we're heading towards monopoly, duopoly.
It's a duopoly at the moment. But I mean, Jetstar and Qantas, they're the same thing for me.
Yeah.
I see them as the same. They're all
under the same
Qantas group umbrella. Qantas Link as well.
Agreed.
Throw it under that umbrella as well.
I've got a question for you, Tom. You just touched on talking about having a fair market in Australia, and that the consumers in Australia are lobbying for some sort of reform to make Australian aviation a fairer market. What reforms would you say need to happen for that to occur?
Yes. I don't think Australia is necessarily ready for the same level of deregulation that occurred in the US market that generated an insane amount of change for the positive towards the consumer. But I think there are elements similar to the US that are similar to the US market deregulation that we can carry across here. Things like you can only capture a certain percentage of market share. I think that's perfectly reasonable. I think that generally, I mean, because right now Qantas has easily skewed market share, and it's partially because they've got such a good rewards program. But allow an airline a support or back a new airline and give them enough resources to build the infrastructure to the same level or similar level as Qantas, and then go, here you go, here's 20% of Qantas's market share as written in law or as legislated, and then see how they go and see how they fare and see how the consumers react to suddenly Qantas being forced into a box where they have to make the most of what they've got rather than striving for more than what they do have.
Yeah.
With that, I think it's important that if, let's say, well, Qantas would have a monopoly now, but let's say they had an entire monopoly of all the routes or sectors across the country, I think the government definitely needs to implement a rule stating that they cannot go outrageous pricing on their tickets because people do need to travel, but I don't want to be going to Sydney on a $5,000 ticket. Mm. So then that's going to turn people obviously more to rail, probably driving more. And I think it's in the airline's best interest not to be charging that much anyway, because then look at their reputation, how they perceive or what they think of their passengers or the customers.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's an interesting one. And I say this, and I know this will never, ever happen, but I think this is probably the quickest fix of what is going on at the moment, is just giving international carriers 8th and 9th freedom.
100%. You imagine how that would change the landscape here?
But that will never happen, because we can't even get international airlines to fly into Australia, let alone fly within the actual country. But it's an interesting one. So we talk about price, but I want to talk about innovation as well. If you've got no competition whatsoever, you are not going to innovate your product.
Mm.
You're going to just settle with what's, you know, you're just going to settle on something because you know that...
Long live the 7-3.
Oh, he is delusional, isn't he? He is.
Long live the 7-3. Yeah.
Nice.
But, look, fair play to Qantas. I think they have... Look, I mean, obviously Project Sunrise is very innovative, I think. It is very innovative. The 350s look really good. Look, at the end of the day, Qantas is still a very good airline.
Making money is actually a good thing.
Yeah, there's our mate Alan George. Actually, making money is a good thing. He's just lost $9.3 million in the past few days.
That's what good companies should be doing.
That's right.
As said by the man himself.
Yep, he said it, not us. That's it, no. So,
would you refund the government that money? Of course you won't.
Would you refund Alan Joyce's bonus? Of course you won't.
Of course you won't.
We'll get around to that one a bit later.
There you go. Yeah. So is there anything else we could hash out at this point in the Rex saga? Or we pretty much covered most of it, I'd say.
I think we've covered most
of it. I think we've covered most of it. I think Rex just simply... I just don't think the direction of the airline was clear. Even me, as somebody who, you know, is in the aviation industry, obviously didn't look into it all too much, but I just don't know what sort of airline they were, whether they were targeting a full-service market or whether they were a budget airline, whether they were something hybrid. I'm going towards more something hybrid, but it wasn't clear the direction they were heading in terms of what airline they wanted to be.
I don't like the direction that it's heading.
Thank you.
That's correct. I knew you'd play that one as well.
Yeah.
Sorry. I think that was the downfall, and some of the decisions that they made, particularly if they're targeting a more business-oriented traveler, things like frequency, to have a frequent flyer program that's good, to have...
Sorry, Ross has just hijacked the podcast.
Oh no.
What is it?
475-00.
Oh my gosh. What's Rexed for Australian Aviation? Oh my gosh. Seriously, that is a...
I thought the picture of Scooby-Doo was pretty good.
What's Rexed?
Australia.
All right. That, I think we've pretty much summarized it. You're right. Yeah, everything you said is right, Nick. I think there's a lot of factors that have played into the ultimate demise of Rex's domestic trunk route attempt, but they will fall back into and still operating in the regional sector. And there's still, you know, hundreds of flights that go each day with just the Saab 340s.
Oh, they have to. Q Link and Link, which is basically just Qantas and Virgin anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And Alliance, but that's Virgin, isn't it? Oh, well, Alliance is. Oh, I saw Alliance this morning was operating under a Virgin.
They have a deal with QF, I thought. Yeah, okay. Oh well. Anyway, that's that particular topic. That's the primary one we wanted to cover in this episode. Yeah. Thank you, Christos, our dedicated caller and listener, for joining us for that particular topic.
Thank you for having me back, boys. Okay. I unfortunately do have to leave because everyone loves a nice 5 a.m. start. And once again, I've got to go put myself in the baggage compartment of an aircraft.
This is a really touchy subject.
Yeah, it's a very touchy subject.
You need to be careful what I say here.
Very excited.
Very excited for work, are you?
He's a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Well, I essentially get paid to do plane spotting all day, so life is very good.
Oh, must be nice.
Makes you feel very good.
Very good.
I don't have that here anyway. Well, thank you
very
much.
It's a pleasure.
No worries, mate. Hey, enjoy your shift tomorrow, and it's good to just everyone to know that you're alive, so.
Yes, thank you, boys. No worries. Thank you a lot, and hope to see you soon.
Catch you next time, man.
Catching.
Bye. That's it, boys. All right, we've got a couple smaller topics to cover for you folks before we call it there on what has been a fantastic dive into everything in the last few months so far. Sao Paulo, lads, 62 dead in a horror crash, an ATR. Lots of speculation around the reason behind the crash. Lots of speculation around what led to that event. What do you guys think?
I just want to make it clear that whatever's discussed from now on relating to this crash is just pure speculation from all of us.
Yeah, till we hear from IATA.
Any official reports regarding this crash, so just just putting that out there right now. But based on what I saw from the video, the aircraft was in some form of stall. As to what led to that stall is completely unknown at this point. But I have heard rumors that it could be relating to an icing issue, as the weather on the day did look questionable at best.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much as far as I can speculate right now. It looked like some form of stall, potentially from an icing issue.
Yeah. Yep. Consider icing. Probably on the jets. Very familiar. Very familiar MEL to a lot of pilots listening. It may not necessarily be an MEL more than just something to heed with when it comes to an aircraft. But yes, no. Horrible, horrible crash in Sao Paulo. Thoughts and prayers are with the victims of the families of the victims in the crash. It's just awful situation. We'll move on to the next one. Quick, very, very short one before we touch on the next sort of conversation topic. Guys, the A320 Airbus got a huge win over the last few months. A321neo XLR variant finally certified in Europe. That's big for them. They can start pumping out orders for European carriers that have ordered them. Still a bit of work to go for the US market, the FAA, and I'm going to assume that CASA will follow suit with whatever the FAA does. We have a relatively tight relationship with a lot of the aviation regulations that they have in place. So I would assume that, you know, it's not far away. If it's not far away for the US, it's not far away for Australia. And we have the potential within our market for that. I think Qantas were looking at A321neo XLRs, right?
Well, Qantas Group.
So Qantas Group, yeah.
So, yeah, it could go anyone.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But no, it's look, it's exciting news. It's an aircraft that's going to revolutionise travel.
Not necessarily for the best for the consumer either, though. Right?
I do understand, but I don't think it's as bad as potentially people make it out to be. Like, I have been on an A321neo before, and believe me, it is a very comfortable aircraft. Do I prefer to be on something like an A330, though? 100%. But it's not an uncomfortable ride. But at the end of the day, this is good for, you know, the airline's bottom line. This is good for their financials.
Yeah,
this is good for them significantly reducing their operating costs.
Yeah, it is 100%.
But yeah, no, I mean, look, I mean, it is fantastic how we can get basically an aircraft that's traditionally known for doing domestic routes that can now fly from literally Melbourne to Singapore.
I'm just having a look right now at the range of the A320 XLR. It's saying it's 4,700 nautical miles, or if you convert that to kilometres, it's 8,704 kilometres.
Yeah.
And just to put that in perspective on the map, Melbourne to Honolulu is 8,800 kilometres.
Wow.
So
what?
Just miss out on that. Let's do Sydney. 8,001. So it could do Sydney-Honolulu. Or probably more comfortably, Brisbane-Honolulu.
Brisbane-Honolulu.
So that's just some perspective for our viewers out there who are...
This is an incredibly capable aircraft for the size that it is.
Nuts.
Brisbane...
They must have put a wild one with this. They have.
Yeah,
Brisbane to Japan is only 7,200 kilometres.
Yeah, it can do that. Yeah, look, I think... It gives Qantas the opportunity to serve routes that are underserved, but also can't be fully filled by some of their larger aircraft, like a 330. Some secondary destinations, potentially they'll use it for. But who knows? Like, you know, I don't work for Qantas. I don't know what's going on in their planning department. But, you know, as far as I see it, I think it's a very exciting time for that particular airline in terms of the fleet that they're getting in. I mean, we always talk about the new 350s, the new 787s, but I think that the 321 XLR is just as exciting in terms of what that aircraft can do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, look, you can fly all the way from Perth to Botswana in that.
Okay. Speaking of certification, let's quickly jump across and talk about the fact that the COMAC C919 is finally nearly certified in Europe. It's inching closer. It's found a few more favorable European manufacturing sites. And it looks like COMAC are taking... we spoke previously about how they're going for the... They had the American COMAC, or the, I guess, similar to that, because, you know, it has Pratt PW engines. And I guess I wonder what they'll come up with this one, because while COMAC, it'll be, you know, majority of the workers working on parts will be in-house, you know, Chinese workers in Chinese locations. There will be a few that have to be European for it to be certified within Europe. So I wonder if they'll come... It would be called the European C919. We'll have all these quote-unquote variants where they're all essentially the same, but they're just, you know, named different things because COMAC values as completely 100% in-house aircraft, I guess.
I've got a question for both of you, actually.
Yeah.
As it stands right now, I don't think any airline outside... fact check me on this, but I don't think any airline outside of China has actually placed an order for the C919.
I don't know. Maybe if any country has, it'd probably be Russia.
Checking you now.
Just purely because of the sanctions in place that they can't place any orders in for Boeing and Airbus.
But if not, if airlines, other airlines around the world haven't placed orders for the C919, do you honestly think that European manufactured parts would contribute to other airlines wanting to place an order for that aircraft type? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
100%. If the backlog. If you've got a new airline that wants to significantly grow, and you've got an airline that wants to grow quick, particularly in the short haul space, I think if COMAC proves itself to be a good enough airliner, it's definitely a contender up there, given that Airbus has such a big backlog and Boeing has the amount of problems that it has.
Yeah.
100%. I said this in a previous episode, but I genuinely think that COMAC has entered the market in such a good time.
Yeah, I agree with you with that.
Because both aircraft manufacturers, well, I say both, Embraer is there as well, but like the big two aircraft manufacturers have significant problems of their own. They're completely different problems, don't get me wrong, but they have problems of their own.
Yeah.
Which are problems that airlines don't really want to have to deal with at the moment.
Yeah, that's right.
Got a question for Nick.
You're right, by the way. Only Chinese.
Only China Eastern.
It's roughly 20 to 25 different groups that have ordered them amongst airlines and lessors, and all of them are in some way related to China.
I'm surprised, though, that Russia haven't ordered any of it, given that they can't order anything from Boeing or Airbus. And I think that some of their fleet... They're having trouble maintaining their fleet simply because they can't get the parts in. Because obviously Russia is sanctioned from all of the Western world.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, what was your question for me?
Oh, just do you want the last Maltesers?
All right. All right, that's a great transition into the next topic. Okay. We're going to talk specifically about what's happening in Dublin over the next few weeks and what has been, you know, in progress, which is to say that...
Alan Joyce is resurfacing.
Well, yes, probably somewhere there.
No, I don't know.
I think he'd want to stay far away from a courthouse, which is the topic of this. In court currently in Dublin, and there's also one open in England as well, is a bunch of suits where aircraft lessors are being heard for claims, insurance claims on aircraft that are currently basically have been illegitimately salvaged by Russia as a result of the Ukraine-Russia war. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these aircraft lessors had their aircraft stuck in Russia at the time and haven't been able to get them out. And Russia is, without hesitation, just started pulling them apart and using parts to feed their own Aeroflot aircraft and, you know, Russian-owned or Russian-operated aircraft airlines. So, I don't know. What do you got? Do you think there's a chance these guys, the insurance companies, are going to be told they have to pay out? Like, what do you reckon?
Well, this is the first time I'm hearing about this. Like, as I said before, I've come into this podcast. I've been very busy the past few weeks. So I really haven't been able to keep up to date with any of the news that's been going on, nor have I really had to prepare for this podcast, given that 2 hours ago I didn't realize I'd be here.
Me too.
Yeah, it was all very last minute. Thank you to Captain Michael for encouraging us to get out and do this episode. He was very much the catalyst. He said, "Boys, where's the episode? I had to re-listen to the last one."
Yeah, we need more messages. Exactly. From Captain Michael.
Yeah. So thank you, Captain Michael.
But as we said at the start, as we said at the start of the episode, we're here every week.
Yeah.
Tom just keeps on forgetting to press the record button. It's crazy.
Oh, that was so. Yeah. Nah, that's it.
It's happened at least three times now.
Yeah.
You've had to re-record something.
Yeah. It's interesting that this is happening in Dublin, because as far as I'm aware, particularly airlines like Aeroflot, which is the big Russian carrier, I think Rossiya had aircraft as well. I'm not too sure about Rossiya, but I know particularly with...
S7, was it?
Well, it was S7 as well, but particularly with Aeroflot, their aircraft were registered under either a Bermudan registry, or it was the British.
It was
Virgin
something obscure.
Islands.
It was something very obscure.
And you'll notice,
that's why they're missing.
Continue, sorry.
You'll notice this as well about a lot of the private jet operators, particularly, you know, if you look at like sort of Vista Jets and Net Jets, how all their aircraft are registered under the Cayman Islands or Bermuda, and that's simply because, as everyone knows, taxes there are very low.
Yeah.
It's the same with Ireland as well.
Just quickly on the Caymans, just before we continue. Yeah. In the Olympics, the Cayman Islands had a swimming athlete that had competed. His name was literally Jordan Crooks, last name Crooks. How appropriate for the Cayman Islands, last name Crooks. I just wanted to note that. Sorry. We may now continue. You were talking about said Cayman Islands.
No, simply because I tend to notice these things, and it's something that, you know, nobody really else notices, and fair play, because it's nothing that's really that interesting anyway. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, before Russia invaded Ukraine, if you looked at the Aeroflot aircraft, the aircraft from S7, which was a Russian, well, still is, a Russian budget carrier, which was once part of Oneworld, and Rossiya, they all had aircraft which were, which had the prefix of Victor Papa or Victor Quebec, which were basically aircraft that were registered in Bermuda or the British Virgin Islands, all leased. What I was talking about with Ross, though, earlier today, because I did catch up with him earlier today, is Italy has the same thing as well. Mm. If you look at ITA, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say all their aircraft, although I might be wrong.
Majority of them.
But the majority of their aircraft are Irish. You look at the registrations at Echo India.
Yeah.
That's Irish. And the reason for that, look, I don't know in particularly, but it's got to do with something. If, God forbid, ITA folds, which obviously Italian airlines have a good track record of going bankrupt.
Shout out Italians.
They're not particularly profitable.
Not the most financially soluble people.
We're right next to Greece. What do you expect?
Hey, shout out Christos.
No, he's gone now, thank God.
That's it.
It's got to do with repossessing their aircraft once the airline goes under.
That's interesting. That, wow.
Yeah, I don't think it's all of ITA aircraft, but most of them.
All right.
Most, seen, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to read out to you guys the Reuters reporting on this hearing.
Okay.
Insurers are balking at payouts. This is the insurance companies that are currently being sued, right? The ones that are supposedly liable on the hook for these aircraft.
Or are we talking about lessors?
Insurers here. Oh,
okay.
So we're talking now from the perspective of the insurers, the ones that are being told they need to fess up millions of dollars because of the aircraft of, you know, insurance claims. Insurers are balking at payouts, with some alleging that there has not been a physical loss of the planes yet, or that the planes are still in the course of being repossessed. Hey, you haven't lost the planes. They're just there in Russia. I mean, you can go get them anytime. It's fine. You haven't lost them. They're still there. Hey, they're still being repossessed. It's just taking a little bit longer, you know, for no particular reason. It's not like there's a war or anything. No, it's fine. Others have argued that lessors voluntarily ended leasing agreements or that Western sanctions prevent insurers from providing covers. So basically saying, oh, whoa, hey, mate, Biden is stopping a whole bunch of stuff from entering Russia. So unfortunately, we must be one of those things. Or we're just going to assume that Biden's going to stop us from getting these planes back. So, sorry about that. The variety of arguments made by lawyers, including whether the issue only relates to the narrower war risk policies or also to broader all risk insurance, are, quote, bewildering and confusing. Senior counsel Paul Gallagher told the court in an opening statement on behalf of the four lessors, insurance cannot agree on the own meaning of their on the meaning of their own policies. That's what he said, which is kind of true. But that's the job of being an insurer, right? It's like finding any possible logical or sound reason that you can hold in court to say that we don't owe you the money that you're claiming you're owed to. And in this case, sad to say, I mean, unless there's actual genuine evidence that the exact aircraft that these guys are trying to seek, or the lessors are trying to seek money from, have been looted by Russia, unless there's actual evidence to show that, I think that actually the insurers have a leg to stand on, you know?
Yeah, we'll never know that though, will we?
No.
In the Western world, particularly at the moment, we won't know.
We have not scrapped aircraft. It's still good.
Yeah. Oh, you see now, actually, speaking of in Russia now, it's actually because they are running so short on parts, the governing regulatory body in Russia has now released an amendment to their current regulation statute to say that an aircraft is still considered airworthy with one brake non-operational on each aircraft because there's such little available parts to keep all brakes on all aircraft operational.
There's Airbuses and Boeing still operating, and where are they getting the parts from when they're all sanctioned?
Exactly.
It's literally, yeah. I mean,
nuts.
I mean,
in Russia, you don't fly plane. Plane fly you.
it's good. It's good. Now, we'll see how that's going on. Fitting that it's an island, though, given the amount of leasing companies that exist there because the corporate tax is so low. Interesting. Really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
That's pretty much those are the solid bullet points for everything that I think it's important that we at least talk about. And we covered a few smaller stuff, like, you know, Alan Joyce obviously losing his bonus and the upcoming prospects for Qantas, you know, through 50
I think most people will be pro Alan Joyce losing his bonus.
Oh, yeah.
It was in the name of tarnishing the reputation of the company, which is fair enough.
Yep. Oh, actually, shout out also to the very recent news regarding Qantas changing their QF9 route.
That
no longer going Perth, London direct. It's actually going via Singapore, which is interesting, right? Because literally a couple months, like 2 months ago, they canned the onward back and forth Melbourne leg or Sydney leg, whatever it was.
Yeah, the Melbourne.
And they just started it in Perth. And now they've actually got to go back to having the transit via Singapore.
But it's only the route towards London because prevailing trade winds still allow direct London to Perth.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
So the aircraft is going to do it actually is going to do Sydney, Singapore, or Melbourne, Singapore, London, and then London,
Perth, Singapore, London,
and it's not the first time.
It's going by Perth still.
The first time this has happened. This is actually the second time it's happened.
And the flight back is direct to Perth.
Yes, that's correct.
This so is all you're telling me is it's actually the only change is QF9 is no longer non-stop.
You're only
on
changing.
The way there.
This is temporary.
The only hand is still non-stop.
This is temporary due to the situations that's happening in the Middle East.
Yeah, the only change is Changi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you say the only Chang is Changi?
I didn't say that. Okay. You can listen to the edit.
Okay.
I've got something playing in my head at the moment.
All right, hit us with it.
Obviously, we have no game show today, so there's more time for actual discussion. What I was thinking of before, right, is we were talking, obviously, I want to bring us back to Rex because I think it's a very fascinating situation. And I think where Qantas has a leg over the likes of particularly Virgin and Rex in the domestic space is I want to try figure out, and this is more of an estimation, how many passengers who are flying domestically on Qantas each flight are actually international connecting passengers. So passengers who have flown in from LAX and they want to go to Brisbane because, God forbid, they don't want to be 14 hours on an A330-200. I'm in the same space as well.
Kind of, but well... Yeah, okay, I guess I can.
How many domestic travelers on a Qantas flight do you think, percentage wise, on an average Qantas flight, are actually international connecting? Because that helps.
It does, yeah. Well, that would definitely tell us a lot.
Yeah, no, it would.
Yeah, and there's a lot of feed in. We know this
because the feed. Yeah, obviously.
Even on is it ninth? No, it's fifth freedom that goes from one country domestically to internationally to another. Still not okay. So even fifth freedom with Qantas into New Zealand on the way back on QF4 from the JFK Sydney flight.
Yeah,
like I was on that flight earlier in the year, Auckland to Sydney. My brother and I on that and. We held the aircraft on the ground. On the second time, I didn't go on QF4. I went on like a QF156 or something, a different like 7-3 flight. And we held pushback and door closure until the delayed QF4 got in because there were like 40-odd connecting passengers to different destinations that weren't staying on the aircraft.
But that's the same flight number, isn't it? The connecting flight in Auckland?
No. What I was saying there is that flight, the QF4 then goes on to go, it goes JFK, Auckland, Sydney, right?
With the same flight number.
Now anyone going to Sydney will stay on the aircraft. Anyone connecting to another location that is served by Qantas can theoretically connect at Auckland.
Oh, so you stay on the aircraft. You don't actually get off the aircraft.
Mm.
You stay, okay.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think that's strictly true. I think they do have a transit lounge. I was going to say, my point there is those 40-odd passengers we're waiting for on our measly little 737 flight, we're going to Melbourne, right? The aircraft that they've come in was going to Sydney. Mm. So they're getting off because they're connecting to a different location. Yeah. And Auckland is the deviation point for a lot of those passengers.
Yeah.
Because Qantas do Auckland, Brisbane, Auckland, Sydney, Auckland, Melbourne. Any others? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Yeah, that might be it.
Auckland, even Gold Coast.
Qantas did that.
Oh, no, that's Jetstar.
Yeah. Well, even so, you can connect onto Jetstar flights. So I would imagine, you know, half that plane empties out and connects onto different locations. So you're right. It is a huge feed-in.
I'm just thinking of different revenue feeds. And this is another reason why Qantas is so dominant. But Food for thought.
I'd love to hear from you, the listeners, about things we might not have touched on with Rex. And also just give us your opinion on what you think is in store for the future for Rex. Do you think ultimately the federal government caves and gives them another handout? Do you think they learn their lesson, stick to regional routes? Do you think that the aviation market in Australia is a little bit unhealthier without the presence of Rex? Or do you think it's better? Tell us your thoughts, your feelings, your opinions. Before we go, lads, I am going to remind everyone that our good friends at Camost are still pumping out absolute banger diecast models.
Yes, they've just released pre-orders for the new Qantas A220 4X Bravo.
Have you put in your pre-order? I have not yet.
No, I really got to get onto it. I only got the email this afternoon.
It's also X-Ray 4 Bravo, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's X-Ray 4 Bravo. Tom and Murray, if you're listening to this, I'd like to put in a pre-order.
Yeah,
so I'm me too.
Actually, you know what?
List.
I'm not even going to email Tom. Pre-order now, all three of us. Let's go.
Yep.
Drafting the email as we speak. I love
it. Well, while Ross drafts that, have a wonderful listen to our spiel on Camost. Picture this. You're new to the world of aviation. You've been drawn in by something you've experienced that fascinated you. Maybe a flight, maybe a type of aircraft, maybe an episode of Air Crash Investigations. In any case, you think you're ready to invest in aviation as an interest or a hobby, but you're not sure where to start. Luckily, there's only one logical answer. Collectors Aircraft Models Australia. They're Australia's largest outlet in die-cast, wooden-carved, and push-fit aircraft models. And they don't just cover commercial flying, but also military, sport, and general aviation too. And while you might have worries as to how long you might have to wait to get the model you want, or maybe you aren't sure how reliable the model is, well, Camost sourced their stock from leading manufacturers from both within Australia and the world over, regularly receiving updates from manufacturers and suppliers as to what's new and being developed. Oh, and what if you spot an issue with the model you bought? Well, Camost will replace your defective model with a fully intact one with no fuss and no extra charge. So don't wait any longer. Head into Camost and secure your model today. 40 Cranwell Street, Braybrook. There's no reason not to.
And I think that concludes everything we have to say. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me here tonight.
Thanks for having us.
In Tom's kitchen.
Yeah, thanks for having me in my kitchen. Appreciate it.
Pleasure discussing all these topics with you. And until next time, stay classy.
See you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye.